You're listening to the NAGRA Podcasters Network. From Port Colborne to Port Dalhousie, from the raging rapids of the Niagara River to Niagara's Gateway in Grimsby, from Fort Erie to Fort George and all the points in between, you're listening to The Regional, a Niagara news magazine from the Niagara Podcasters Network. Thanks for listening to The Regional, Niagara's news magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. I'm Trevor Twining. I'm the host. It is September 9th, 2017, and we're here to cover the week's news and events, and I'm here with three great guests. First, Adam White from Niagara Podcasters Network. He is one of the hosts of the Punk News podcast and is running his own thing called Some Party. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I'm happy to be here. The Thing, so people don't know, it's a newsletter about Canadian music.
Excellent.
That's my plug.
We have Melinda Cheevers from Niagara This Week. Melinda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we have Robin McPherson, both recording engineer for the show and also a participant today. So, Robin, thank you for double duty.
Thank you. I'm working on testing my multitasking skills.
So far, so good.
So far.
So, all right, let's start off with a really serious story, the opioid crisis that is going basically all throughout Canada. Niagara is not going to be unaffected by this. We are seeing deaths have doubled in the last 10 years from 20 to 40, but the overdose-related ER visits actually quadrupled from 70 to 300 in the same period of time. So we have this growing concern and crisis. There was a presentation done to the region this past week about how we're going to react to this challenge and what we need to do. Let's start with this question. One of the big things that they said would make a huge difference in how we approach this issue is the introduction of a safe injection site into the region. That is a really controversial issue. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, what we tend to see is that they're always a cause for controversy, and it's not always a cause for people to come out of the woodwork and rally against whatever they perceive as being the social cause of addiction or the criminality of addiction. And it blows up into a wider issue about people's values and what they're ascribing to, you know, what being the cause of drug usage, which really doesn't actually help anyone that is there to be treated by it. So it always ends up being like a mire, like a controversial, you know, pylon from everyone coming out of the woodwork. But none of that controversy actually helps anyone that would have been using that site. And by delaying those types of installations so that we can have a huge moral debate about it, all those people that, you know, would be using it are still using. They're just using elsewhere. So there's been, you know, enough introduction of those in major communities, in particular Vancouver, where you'd think there would be enough evidence or we could look and we could say what works and what doesn't work about both like the physical placement of those, which is of course going to be a big issue with it, but also, you know, the mechanics of how it's run, that we should be able to make an informed decision about it. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. We'll probably end up rehaving the same arguments that people have everywhere else.
Of course, it wouldn't be Niagara if we didn't. I think that it's a good idea that they're starting to talk about it now, though. Like, even in all the information that's out there, they said it's going to be a long process, possibly 2 years. Toronto's going through that now, and then it will come here. So at least let the debate start now. Let the people get the things off their chest and get on the road to making it happen.
Yeah, I think ditto. I think we will have it will be a debate. It will inevitably be, you know, a debate about where it is, why we need it, whether we need it. I'm sure Niagara will, you know, do its excellent job of, oh, we don't need that. We'll be fine without it. What it's going to cost, you know, nobody's going to want it in their backyard.
Yeah. The one thing that I found really hopeful from the conversation that I saw that was reflected in the piece that I saw, but also in how the various non
non-political government organizations, right? So if you look at the civil servants within the region and things like that, there is a lot of coordination happening, and there's a lot of really good work. It seems like that's being done from the people who are on in many cases in the front lines on this issue, and they're sharing information. They're working together. I'm actually hopeful about that, because those are the people who need to work together, I think, first before we can get a lot of consensus on it. Because if they come back and they're telling us the same types of stories and that these things are needed and how they'll help, if that is reinforced time and again, hopefully that will get the message across to those who are responsible for making the political decisions. But even then, like you look at the types of things that Bob Gale was saying. Bob Gale is the chair of the Police Services Board, and he's saying, just throwing crime prevention and arrests at this problem is not going to make it go away. And for somebody who's like a tough on crime guy, Bob Gale is, it's important, I think, for that message to start getting out early, because we're not going to solve this problem just by throwing police officers at it, right? So hopefully that leads more into what other types of things work. And I think once you get into those conversations, that you start to see that things like safe injection sites do help mitigate the harm caused by these types of crises. But there's also, there's this whole range of other issues. So next question. Niagara is this amalgam of different types of municipalities, right? We have towns and cities. And is there an urban versus rural divide to this topic? And if so, what does it look like? Adam, let's start with you.
I think that you'll absolutely see that for a few reasons. I mean, the first is that you have, because we're talking about opioids, which a lot of people become addicted to when they're in pain treatment, and they tend to, to come out when they're, people are in their 60s and their 70s, people that you wouldn't necessarily consider drug users, right?
Right.
So you have a whole different demographic angle on this than other drug problems from an age standpoint. So there's that aspect to it. But I think that the layouts of a lot of the communities in the area are going to make a huge difference with how the problem manifests itself. So I live in Niagara Falls. I live down on the call it charitably the more strippery end of Lundy's Lane area, and what we see is that this is an area that has tons of low cost motels and that are in that on that strip. Mm-hmm. A lot of places that aren't so much being used necessarily for tourist accommodation, but they're being used as long term residences by people of low income or people that do have drug problems, and the amount of on the ground action that you would need to be able to to intercept people with overdose cures and things like that is much higher in that area just because of the commercial layout of that end of Niagara Falls, I think, than you would otherwise. But because this is something that's going to affect, that could affect anyone and not necessarily just people that are involved in, drug subcultures, you're going to have people that are going to have the same problems that you're going to have, down that end of Lundy's Lane, out in Wainfleet somewhere, and I don't know where they go. If you do need that, naloxone is the opioid cure that they've been, or the opioid
antidote,
the antidote for an overdose, right?
Right.
If you do need that, and you're in one of these more rural areas, I'd question if you'd be able to get it in time. If for no other reason than it probably takes a lot longer for law enforcement or whoever to get to you if you're in crisis compared to if you're in a crowded area.
I would call it maybe the clothing optional part of Lundy's Lane.
Yeah, that's a way to phrase it.
But I mean, I don't really have much to contribute on the rural and urban divide. I think that you're seeing it hit people harder than they expect, and sometimes it gets cut into other drugs, so people may not even know that they're getting it, and that's a large problem too. But
I'm downtown St. Catharines, So there is a significant amount of drug use downtown St. Catharines. I mean, you just have to go to Centennial Gardens to see, you know, used needles, and they have a single needle drop box, which is hard to explain to a 5-year-old. But anyway, so I think there's pockets of downtown where you are seeing it more frequently. And I think one of the things about being in the, I'll call it the urban core, for lack of a better term, is that you have the community services who are well aware of the people who are downtown. They know them. They have a general knowledge of them as well. The ambulance, paramedics, fire, police also are, I'm not going to say it's going to be easier for them to get the Naxalone, but I think that there's an awareness in those areas where you're not going to find that awareness in the more rural areas, Fond Hill, you know, Fenwick, Ridgeville.
Yeah, like if you're doing first responder stuff in downtown St. Catharines or on Lundy's Lane in the Falls, you'd be more anticipating that you're going to run into something like that than you would elsewhere. And I guess that might be part of the problem. The one thing that is sort of encouraging, and Gail said this in the quote, was that like he did acknowledge that there's a huge age demographic on this. So that will hopefully encourage the region as they're figuring out how they're going to implement a public health and safety policy with regards to this, to not treat it as you would treat other drugs, because the temptation is that you approach drugs not as a medical problem but as a criminality problem,
right?
And that's, you know, you're not going to arrest people out of being addicted to opioids because they were taking it as a painkiller at some point. So
that's like one of the biggest the biggest sort of cohorts of people who are suffering with, you know, with this problem, is that you have people who have taken it as painkiller and then they get addicted to that. And then they're trying to come off that. Right. So, and a lot of those people are, you know, older people who have had surgeries and things like that. And that's a big part of our population. So, let's see, moving along. Let's talk about rodents. Pied Piper Parade coming along in the next couple of weeks. And it's good news because there are rats everywhere. So rat reports are on the rise, and the region is reticent to do anything. So there was an awful lot of R words to basically say that we have a lot of rodents showing up. This is not just a problem in Niagara. It's happening everywhere. The report that I read, though, was surprisingly scarce on numbers, but I wanted to get your take around the square table. What do you guys think of this story? Melinda, let's start with you.
Well, I think for anyone that's living in St. Catharines near any of the recent demo sites, it's not really a new issue. I've been hearing reports of rats on the rise for well over a year now. And I don't know, there's one word for it. It's gross. I don't want to have to deal with these. One of our reporters, he's in Niagara Falls, Paul. He has been dealing with a rodent problem in his area too. And I know that Niagara Falls in general has seen an increase in it as well. But it's something that needs to be addressed because it can lead to other issues along the way. But it's one of those questions of how do you address it apart from everyone getting rat traps and putting them out in their yards.
I am blissfully unaware of this where I am in Niagara Falls, and I'm worried that I'm just on the cusp of the rat wave and I don't know that it's coming. The problem with this is that as soon as you try if you're looking at the source of the rats from being, say, like dilapidated brown space buildings or something like that, well, there's one thing that I guess you can do there from a pest control standpoint. But if it's a more, say, insidious problem where it's across an urban area and there are homes that might be more conductive to having a rat population living in them than others, you really quickly all of a sudden get onto like a property rights issue where if, you know, someone has a yard and that yard is full of, you know, little rat hotels and they don't seem to care and they don't want to, you know, change the way that they're living or that they're, you know, how they're putting things on their property or what's on their property or anything like that, then all of a sudden you run up against like a whole other host of problems where it's not just so simple as, you know, finding the source. So I would imagine that that starts to become an issue. Everyone has that one house in their neighborhood where you look at it and you're like, that's where the rats are coming from. But what are you going to do?
Robin, do you have a house like that in your neighborhood?
I do. But I also am, you know, close to Hotel Du and the old GM factory, so I can't blame it on the single house on the street. But I, you know, it's part of the redevelopment. The good news for downtown is that there are fewer skunks. I've seen since the rat problem has increased, the skunk problem has decreased.
So the rats have displaced the skunks.
Yes.
That's...
I'm not sure.
I guess
that's
silver lining.
If you have dogs, it's a definite silver lining.
I know where the skunks have gone because I've de-skunked a dog twice this summer.
Yes.
Well,
and no one wants to de-skunk a dog.
So I live near Scott and Bunting, right? So which is close to the canal, and we're also having this issue. So it's but no large buildings or anything have been displaced over, you know, on our side. But it has been a really wet summer, which means that the water levels are up. And so maybe this is, you know, also contributing to it. And it's, you know, it hasn't just been Niagara that's had this wet summer. It's been all over. So
there are rats everywhere.
Rats.
No matter where you go.
But only in Niagara will you find the Pied Piper Parade. I'm hopeful that this fixes the problem.
Maybe they need to change the theme of it this year.
To deal with actual rats instead of just kids? Yeah.
Maybe. They need to get them a pipe, like a...
A proper Pied Piper, yes. Mm-hmm. So the town of Pelham is sending its lawyer to this week's regional council meeting to tell councillors to stop harassing the town over its finances. The region, it doesn't have any jurisdiction over what a town does or doesn't do with its finances, and yet the region is sort of, it based on what the town of Pelham is saying, is poking its nose where it doesn't belong in the town of Pelham's finances over some development deals. And just wanted to find out what you guys thought of this story in particular. Dave Augustine, mayor of Pelham, says that enough is enough. They have answered the questions to the best of their ability, and there is there's nothing more to be said there. And so butt out. What do you guys think?
I've got a lot of thoughts on this one. The jurisdiction thing is the main sticking point for me. I feel like the audit committee has a lot of things they could be looking into, perhaps things within their jurisdiction, traveling expenses of their own counselors maybe, or perhaps they can look into overages on the Burgoyne Bridge, or maybe overages on the Niagara-on-the-Lake Water Waste Treatment Plant. These are all things within the region's jurisdiction that could be looked at. But instead, they seem to be harping on Pelham, and which has come out multiple times. They've had their lawyer there. They had their CAO there. They had a town hall meeting. They had a 300-and-something page report. And at the crux of it all is that it's not within the region's jurisdiction. So, I mean, that's one thought. I'll let someone else take one, and I'll save some for later.
I'm curious about the jurisdictional issue here, because if that should be pretty clear, because it's a written law somewhere that says what the region has authority over and what they don't. So if the region clearly does not have authority over this matter, at what point can Welland just ignore them? Just say, okay, you guys keep talking about this, but we're going to move on because you can't do anything about it. Like, you have no teeth in this.
It could have technically been months ago, I think. But my understanding of how the town was approaching this was that they wanted to be transparent in how they communicated around this issue. And the folks who initially brought it up are still saying that it's not that transparency is not enough, that there needs to be more. But I don't know, from looking at this issue, I don't know what more the town could do to make it more transparent. And yet there's still calls saying that they're hiding something, but it's...
Yeah, and I would question, like, even if they were, and to make no value judgment one way or the other on whether the value of that land was overblown or whatever, right? Do they not have to go address that in the forum that actually has the authority to do something about it? So, like, take the region out of it. Like, the complainant here can still have a complaint, but go to wherever... one would voice that complaint, whether it's with the province or some higher municipality oversight board or something. I don't quite get why it's constantly filtering back into the region otherwise, other than that's where it started.
I'm going to say, as we move closer to 2018 in an election year, that I'm pretty sure that, you know, there's a whole lot of politicking that's going on. Unfortunately, or depending on which side you're on, I mean, Mayor Dave has maybe not made a lot of friends at council, or made, you know, brought up things, and whether they are accurate or not, perceived injustices against certain councillors. So I think there's a whole lot of that that goes into this regional look at Pelham. The region isn't the only person complaining or, you know, making a big stink about the land. The Pelham Voice.
That's true.
You know, the Pelham Voice has been spending a great deal of time talking about it as well. And my parents live in Fond Hill, and they, you know, you hear lots of people from Fond Hill, Fenwick area talking about it. I'm not sure how much more transparent they can get. I know it's a big report, a 300 something page report. I don't know whether that needs to be boiled down to a nice executive report that someone can read that's 2 pages long that says, we did this. This is how it went. You know, everybody's view of transparency is different than the others.
It's, I mean, going back to what you said about the motivations behind some of them, I find it funny that the language being used to levy these accusations against Pelham and, in some cases, the mayor and town staff themselves are eerily similar to the language that has been used in the past against another, agency within Niagara. Even now, you have the developer who is up speaking, calling himself a whistleblower. And in the article that we all read on this issue, he was quoted as, you know, saying, how can a municipality go after a taxpayer that's just raising questions in such a way? I mean, well, there's another organization within Niagara that's suing a taxpayer for raising questions. And I don't know if you ever read that report. I am speaking about the MPCA, and Ed Smith is the taxpayer. And if you ever read the report, that the unnamed authored report that went out, it was mostly just questions that were asked in it. So not so much statements. There was, you know, if this is true, we have these questions, and then listed questions after it. And that's essentially what Rayner is doing as well, is just asking questions. So I find it a little convenient, the mirroring of the language that's happening in this debate.
Taxpayer is a pretty thin, you know, veneer to hide under. I mean, you may as well just say, how could they go after a Canadian citizen about this?
Well, it's true. Yeah.
Like, are not most of us, can we all claim that when we get in a dispute with someone?
Well, I think that the, for me, the thing with this issue is that there is the gentleman who's raising these concerns, his name escapes me at the moment.
Rayner Hummel.
Yes, Rayner Hummel. So Hummel is bringing these concerns forward, and as they have been answered by the town, he's still saying that's not satisfactory. And at some point, that changes from just asking questions to something that is more akin to harassment, right? And while he has the freedom of speech to continue in that direction, the town also has the freedom to, that freedom doesn't necessarily mean a consequence, freedom of consequence from those actions. And if they're, if they take him to court and he's found to, be abusing that freedom, or that he's gone past the point where it's a freedom, and he's now, you know, using it to, intimidate, you know, council or something, then he should certainly be responsible for, you know, for those outcomes. So I don't know that we're at that point yet, and I'm not even suggesting that we are, but freedom of speech does not mean freedom from the consequence of that speech, right?
No, so. But I to Melinda's point, you know, the same has been said of Ed Smith,
yeah.
Right? That's what's being, you know, done to Ed. So it's, you know, I mean, one man's harassment is another man's. I just have a lot of questions.
But to come back to what you were saying earlier about there being some political motivations behind this, potentially saying something like it's not satisfactory, while that doesn't really mean anything, and it's hard to say at what point it will be satisfactory, by having that out there and in the public record, that helps sow doubt, mm-hmm. right? So that's, you know, if you're trying to make, you know, the potential opponent or the person that you don't want to win seem like more of a questionable figure, then raise questions, especially questions that you're not going to ever have a cap on. Mm-hmm. So that there's a convenience of language between both, you know, I'm a taxpayer, but also, you know, not satisfactory, because you could ride not satisfactory forever and just never be satisfied. And then, you know, you can see the paper write-up at some point where they're going to be like, questions continue to dog Dave Augustin. Well, sure, because someone continues to dog him with questions, right? Does that mean that necessarily those questions have a lot of merit? That, well, that doesn't really matter. The questions are there and it sows doubt.
And I think that's when it comes down to media literacy as well. So even when you're referencing other papers that maybe are dogging on certain issues, if you read them with a bit of a critical eye sometimes, then you can read between the lines or see where these questions are coming from. And I think even in terms of the questions that are coming up in general at the regional level, which I find it interesting that they're allowing so much of the regional time to be spent on this issue if it's not under their jurisdiction, when there are other people that come forward with delegations to speak about literal regional matters or conduct of counselors, and they are denied delegations or denied the opportunity to speak, and someone else has granted them multiple times on an issue that they're questioning whether or not it is under their jurisdiction.
Amazon, the world's largest retailer, has decided that it's going to create a second headquarters. And they put out basically a request for letters of intent, I guess, to the world's major cities. And we see cities like Toronto and Vancouver and Chicago and Niagara put up that they would like this new headquarters to be here. 50,000 jobs come with this. Also a huge, possibly real estate deal, because there's brand new development. You need a very big building to hold 50,000 people. This would be a great boon for Niagara, but it doesn't seem like it is feasible, reasonable, or logical. And yet, Regional Chair Caslin is trying to lead a group of bannermen to try and secure this real estate deal. Adam, does this make sense to you in any way?
We're doing a great sales job for it this week, right? We got rats, we've got a drug crisis, we have intergovernmental fighting.
Well, we don't have a drug crisis yet. It's coming like it is in so many other places.
We have a looming drug crisis, right? We have the rats. This is very sad to me. It's sad because it seems like it's an undignified play for it that they're trying to do. So Amazon put out a number of criteria that they were going to want about this, and I think it was a community of at least, I think, 1 million people is what they were looking to move into.
Yep.
You know, proximity to an international airport, all those kind of things that you would need to support like a 50,000 person. I remember, we're not talking about like a building, we're talking about a campus, like 50,000 tech workers or whoever or executives that would be at this thing, because we're not talking about an Amazon factory, we're not talking about a building where they're going to have, you know, the lower people on the rung, you know, put your order in envelopes. We're talking about, you know, management and decision making, exactly, and everything, yeah, like that, right? So this is a campus. The actual Amazon headquarters in Seattle has something like 21 restaurants on it alone. Like it's a massive undertaking. Of course, it would be a boon to anywhere where it's got to go. But if you were going to go put that somewhere in the world, if Niagara was on top of that immediately when it came out, then I would have a little bit more sympathy for it. But it feels like the news cycle went and mentioned, you know, it mentioned that Toronto was the one that broke here, because John Tory like immediately jumped on it, and they said, you know, Toronto wants this, and there's actually a lot of merits why building something like that in Toronto would make sense. And then Hamilton the day later came and said, you know what, like, you know, Hamilton's a growing place, we're not Toronto, which is always a boon for everyone, and, you know, and it could work here. We have proximity to a small international airport. Like, Hamilton makes a little bit more sense. All of the we're close to the border arguments that you can make for Niagara, Hamilton can make as well. So
that's true.
That was so Hamilton came out, and then like 2 days later, it was like, oh, Niagara region's going to get in on this. And it's like, why did you even bother? Cause what are we, how are we going to sell that? It seems so like Johnny come lately. I don't know why we bothered.
Can we just sell them all of Niagara? Can they just buy Niagara? Just Amazon will just take over all of Niagara.
We could put it on eBay.
Yeah, we could put it on eBay. Well, they bought Whole Foods, so...
That would be an effective amalgamation strategy.
It's a perfect amalgamation strategy.
Buy one Niagara? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just buy one giant...
But we call it Prime Niagara.
We would, yes.
Niagara Prime.
It would
Prime.
Be Prime.
Because there's a bonus?
And you would pay that Prime fee, that small Prime fee, and everything would be better.
And there'd be a blue check mark beside us on the map.
Exactly. We'd be back on the map.
We'd be on the map, yes.
What was that old movie where they said, and The Simpsons has parodied this, where they say that, oh, on the other end of town, there's you know, gold or treasure, and it's under a big X, and then everyone gets in their goofy car, and they all start chasing each other across town to do it. Well, like, Niagara is the last to get into their car, and we're chasing them about this now.
To be fair, though, I mean, what other option did Al Kaslin really have? Like, you kind of have to say, yes, we can put it out there too. We deserve to be Amazon's spot as well, because otherwise everybody would look at him and say, why aren't you fighting for this? Why aren't you throwing your hat into the ring?
He's like, because I'm trying to fight Dave, and Dave is taking up all of my time.
Well, I...
That's why he took 2 days.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good point, Melinda. And I think that if we are being... If we're being responsible with the limited resources that we have as a, you know, as a community, we should be focusing on development efforts where we have a chance of winning. And if you look at the requirements that Amazon listed out, we don't meet a lot of them. Right?
How many do we meet?
I didn't do an actual count, but I think that the important point is there that we don't satisfy the requirements, and so it's like going into a job interview. Right. And saying, well, I don't have any of the qualifications, but I have a lot of enthusiasm. And Niagara has a lot of enthusiasm for getting this Amazon campus, but we don't have a lot of the qualifications. How I think we should have approached this is picked one of the neighboring communities that, you know, that might be a closer fit, and saying, you know what, we support their bid for doing this. Because here's the thing. If regardless of whether it goes to Toronto or Hamilton or, you know, one of those places, it's going to benefit Niagara. And there are a couple of ways that happens. There's a direct benefit of Hamilton might actually be a better choice than Toronto because it's closer, which means there's less commute times, and it would be a big boon for Hamilton. And if you look at the numbers, like Hamilton is what, 600,000 or 400,000, that's a million. Right. If you do like a joint bid, Hamilton, Niagara, right, as the campus, then we meet the criteria. Right. So looking at it in that way, I think we should have cooperated rather than tried to compete in this particular instance, and lending our support to a more palatable offering would have done, I think, more strategically for us, because it shows that we're a willing community partner and we're willing to lend our strength and support in areas where it makes sense.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate with all of you all. And I'm just going to say that I think Niagara should go for it. Go all in. Why not? We are close to the American border, so we are well situated. We are close to multiple airports. I know for us, it seems like we're far away, but we're close to Buffalo, we're close to Hamilton, we're close to Toronto. In some of the major cities in the United States, it's about the same commute to get to an airport as it would be from here to those airports. We do have a large amount of land available that just needs to have something on. Toronto doesn't have as much land as we do, open, able to develop. We have a workforce that needs jobs badly. So they should just come and hire everybody and put it here in Niagara. That's my bid. We won the Canada Games. We can win this.
It's taking all my personal willpower not to start singing the monorail song from The Simpsons. I have so many Simpsons analogies for this issue. If they could make it happen, then I would gladly be wrong on this. But
not only would I gladly be wrong, I would vote for Kaslin for like the next 20 years. I would make that my, that's my personal promise.
That's on the record.
That's exactly on the record. If that happens, absolutely. Cause if he can pull this rabbit out of his hat, again with the rodents, but, if he can do that, then yeah, absolutely. I will support him until my dying days.
What worries me is that a lot of the language that's come out from Caslin about this has, if I, especially if I was looking at this from say Amazon's perspective, hasn't been anything that sounds substantive, but trumpets a lot of the buzzwords that we've I guess anointed ourselves with. So there's a quote here where he said, "Oh, like we're the best position for a company like Amazon to connect with because we're designated as the economic gateway and we have a foreign trade zone point right here in Niagara." Like, what's all that mean? Like, what's all that mean from Amazon's perspective that we're designated the economic gateway? I don't think that ticks a particular box in their evaluation criteria. That sounds like a Niagara buzzwordy thing about where we're situated on the border. And I don't know if that plays very well into what they need. I mean, a company like Amazon is going to build this massive headquarters where they're going to run a tech empire out of, or co-run a tech empire out of. What they are probably looking for is going to be lifestyle things for the, you know, 50,000 high-tech workers that are going to live there, or the people that they're going to need to attract to move to those communities and work there. And I would question whether Niagara has, you know, enough of appeal from that standpoint, from a staffing, you know, like what do you, like, where are you going to live? What are you going to do? Right. Like I would really question whether we're set up for that influx of people. And to not have it be, oh, okay, well, we'll just doze all this land and build everything anew there. I don't know if that's necessarily as appealing as looking at, say somewhere like Chicago, where you can go and you can say, like, they're like, we have Chicago here, right? Like, we have an existing place that will be able to facilitate all that. And it's not something we have to kind of spring from the ground up for you. So I don't know. I love it if it was here, but I have my doubts that we're actually suited for that, and the arguments don't seem to fly.
Anything we don't have here, they can just order on Amazon and get delivered.
Melinda wins.
Yep.
That is actually the best argument, yep. Because and if you have Amazon Prime, you can get it 2 days free, right? Mm-hmm. So
if they were here, it'd be like that same day shipping. We could do that.
Oh, they could send drones.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Would we need an airport for the drones?
We have an airport.
Oh, yeah.
So, wrapping up, Robin McPherson, Melinda Cheevers, and Adam White, thank you very much for joining us today on The Regional, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Regional, Niagara's news magazine on Niagara Podcasters Network. Recorded at the Pop-Up Podcast Studio at Cowork Niagara, home of Niagara's independent workforce. The executive producer is Trevor Twining. The producer is Laura Yip and Trevor Twining. The recording engineer is Robin McPherson. The editor is Trevor Twining. If you have tips or comments or would like us to cover a story on The Regional, you can reach out to us at niagarapodcasters@gmail.com.